player I'm going to get mad at you guys about, just so, you know, steel yourself.
Failure.
Oh, shit.
You take it very personally.
You want, like, really dumb takes? You can lead the horse to water.
So I'm just going with my heart over my head, because my head is stupid anyway.
Prepare for total domination.
What are the hot takes I'm not going to get canceled for?
I've never been proven more wrong in my life so quickly and so dramatically. Recording! December 11th, 2023. It is the day after the WNBA draft lottery, I should say, not the WNBA draft itself, in case you're listening to this way into the future. It's after the lottery. We have special surprise. Joining me, Snap Wilson, and the rest of our sixth pod bench squad, Robococo MJ Tolliver. From the Next Hoops, the writer of my WNBA draft Bible. This is it. This is the scripture. This is what I look at. I hear you giggling. You're giggling on the chat. But it's true. This is it. This is my Bible. And we have one of the apostles in the house. It is M. Adler from the Next Hoops. M, say hi.
Hello. Pleasure to be here. Which apostle am I?
I leave that up to you.
Here's the issue is I'm Jewish. I don't know them.
Oops. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John were for the four apostles, or John, Paul, George, and Ringo, I suppose, depending on what scripture you follow.
I feel like I'm more of a George.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, George was the sensitive one.
I'll take that.
Welcome. Let us get through the initial the thing we usually do with guests, which is first of all, tell the people where they can find you and what you normally do.
Hi. So you can find me on Twitter at M_Adler. That's EM_Adler, or on Blue Sky at emilyadler.bsky.social. I'm not sure what that is. Everyone pretty
sure
much has
you added on Blue Sky, even though I never ever log into it.
Everyone has the same handle. I usually log into it if I just like want to scroll aimlessly while lying in bed.
And not feel totally depressed.
Pretty much. You know, the jokes are better than they are on Twitter these days.
Yeah.
So I'll take it. It really feels like when I was like a sophomore in college and just like posting really awful takes about, what was that year's draft? Like Charlie Collier and Dana Evans while they were in college and they would get like 2 likes. I miss those days. I got that feeling back.
Yeah, now you just post your takes and everybody's like, screw you!
It's a long mute list. And honestly, I'm not sure when my mute list sort of became more advertisers or more like just random reply people.
My mute list is longer than my followers list at this point. But it is mostly advertisers, mostly everybody who's advertising on Twitter. Just like,
pretty much.
Nah, son. All right. Okay. Let's get into this. All right. So first of all, the news you already know, the WNBA draft lottery occurred yesterday and the order shook out pretty much almost chalk. The Indiana Fever got the number one pick, the LA Sparks number two, Phoenix Mercury number three, and in the sad spot is the Seattle Storm. Just outside of the big three pairing. Now we know who's got what. But let's get back to basics. Because I am very, very curious about your process. So as a, you know, scouting and kind of determining, looking at players and thinking about how their skills will apply. This is also why I love your guide, is that you actually talk about it in terms of the roles that they will have at the next level and such. But when you're watching a game, you're going in and you're like, all right, I'm watching it and I am looking at a player that I have never seen before and thinking about, well, that's not going to happen because they're going to be seniors by that point. You get the idea. If you're going in, you're looking at a player and you're thinking, how does what they're currently doing apply at the WNBA player? Take me through a little bit of your thought process, your approach. when right. when you do that.
Yeah, so it's funny in the way that we have it for women's basketball players, because like you said, you never really go in blind. With a few exceptions, we
Nadia Posh or somebody like that.
I was about to say international players.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean international players, honestly. So the process is funny. I leave the process on that up to usually Hunter on our team to decide sort of who might or might not be a prospect. And then he'll just randomly message us at like 3 a.m, 2 p.m.
Hey guys, new prospect just dropped. Check it out.
At the absolute most random times. And he will tell us that he's watching the Croatian B League. He will occasionally send clips, and sometimes it's of someone who turns out to be, you know, like Leila Lekan. And sometimes the clip he's sending is of people who look like they are 12 years old trying to hit a layup and failing miserably. So that's about the initial process. But in terms of, you know, actually trying to figure out, you know what we're scouting for me, it comes from it comes about by just, you know, trying to watch the game with, I think, an open mind and just really getting a feel before even getting into, I think, you know, a lot of note taking and getting into, you know, comparisons and all that and archetypes, just sort of getting a feel for what a player does well and what they don't do well. And, you know, that really starts with, you know, what they do with their teammates and what they do against the defense, and just trying to get I wish I had a better word than feel, but it is just kind of off the cuff and just like trying to see if there's even a little bit of X factor where you can say, you know, this player is really able to make, you know, competition that might be a little bit like what they would face in the pros or maybe isn't, and is, you know, able to sort of exert themselves on the game as opposed to, you know, just existing within the realm of the game. And that's, you know, again, not exactly the most quantitative way I can put it, but, you know, for me, my background in just in sports in general, honestly, is at least in this way, is from football. You know, it's a long story on its own, but I actually used to coach football on the varsity staff on our at my high school. It was a full blown assistant coach. And, you know, I was just really into, you know, different aspects of the game. And I learned
Are we talking about American football?
American football, yeah.
Okay, all right, just making sure.
No, you're good. And I just learned a lot from, you know, both coaches and our staff, and both just being really sort of, having a lot of downtime in classes when I didn't feel like paying attention, and just scrolling through a lot and looking at how the process of scouting was working for other, you know, just scouts who were, you know, just sort of on the public side of football in that sense. And I think a lot of it just comes down to the process of learning and the process of, you know, just being able to evaluate what you see around you.
Okay, cool.
What would you say is something that you pay attention to that you feel like not enough people putting together draft boards are doing?
That's a good question.
Dump on other people who make draft boards. And why you're
I think, yeah. So there's definitely a couple things that come to mind. I think the most important one, just in terms of like, I don't necessarily want to like rag on any players in specific, because like everyone who plays the game, first of all, is more talented than I am, to be clear. But like, you know, think of a player, you know, before this year, let's say like Haley Van Lith, a lot of people in certain mock drafts might've had her as, you know, like a mid first round pick. And even if we can sort of separate like the sort of public hype just around her game for, you know, reasons that are, I think, really complicated to try to get into, certainly beyond the draft perspective. But I think just in terms of, you know, why some mock drafters might've had her higher, I think one of the things you at least want to look for is someone beyond just, you know, obviously a very heavy mid-range game. And you would say, well, you don't really want that either way at the next level, unless you're hitting them like Paige Beckers. But, you know, you want to look for someone who even sort of within that role is able to do that without making it look hard. Like, you want certain indicators for the fact that they are moving quicker than the game around them, because that just sort of cascades to so many things. If you're moving quicker than the game around you, you know, that that cascades into a really high processing level that is an indicator of your level of athleticism. It shows a level of fluidity and an ability to respond to what's around you in very discrete ways, as opposed to, you know, having to have a very mechanical and conscious thought process, because you want that all to be subconscious. So when you think about, you know, Haley Van Lith prior to this season, you know, very good college player, but you think a lot of it just did not look easy. A lot of it looked like contested pull-up mid-range shots. A lot of it looked like really sort of, you could see the way she was thinking and having to get to her spots and, you know, learn what wasn't working within the course of the game, which is fine. And again, that's really good from a college level, but those are things that, you know, once the bar is raised at the next level, there are players for whom stuff that they are good at gets harder, and there are players for whom stuff that they are good at, the threshold completely passes where they are already at.
MJ?
I'm just, I'm going to piggyback off Becky a little bit. And just, I'm going to acknowledge the fact that I love your draft, like, breakdowns. Some of the stuff that you say, like this right here with the Sarah Andrews, 5'6", Ryan Howard. Which one? It's one of these that tickled the hell out of me. Hold on. It was like something with Chris Paul. Even shorter Steph Curry. And then... What was the other one? Like, hold on. Where is it? Please let me find it quick.
Was there like a Chris Paul without the defense?
It was Chris Paul. Like, yeah, Chris Paul without.
I think that was George
Page,
wasn't
that's
it?
Page. No, that's Page.
That was Page. Okay.
Hold on. Right. Let me go up. Yeah, yeah. Fast Chelsea Gray. If prime Chris Paul was a poor defender for Page Beckers. But I just want to say your breakdowns are awesome. Like, I just want to piggyback on that fact. And so much that I actually. You know, I looked at all the draft boards leading up to this podcast, and I started doing some of my own research because I don't necessarily have the time to catch all of these games like on the fly. So I've been playing catch up, and I ended up like piggybacking off of your list because you do have more of like the players that are overseas, and I love mm-hmm. watching overseas ball. Like I guess I have a higher tendency to watch overseas ball more because I can actually go on YouTube and watch those games. Like,
yeah, don't blame me.
A lot of them, yeah, and they're like free, you know what I mean? I don't have to get mm-hmm. on somebody's app and all of that. Like, YouTube just sends it to me, like, boom, such and such is playing, and I can watch the women overseas play quicker than I can like a college game. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like some of the breakdowns you have in here, and like, man, I love that it's kind of aligned with what we've been bringing to attention, and I'm starting to notice that it's a thing that people are asking. And it's just about the point guard situation in the WNBA. Mm. And you are loaded with guards at the top. And the bigs mm-hmm. that you have are gems. Like, that top 15, like, is just loaded with all just good players. And then the bigs that fit within that range, like, maybe a little bit, like, to the 20th, you know, of your list, like, all the bigs that are in there, there's something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of putting them in the right places. Yeah. And Becky's gonna love if we get around to talking about it that type of way. But yeah, like, yeah, your list is amazing. I love this list.
Thank you. Yeah, the you know, I'll say one of the things that we try to do, at least in terms of the blurs of the list, we try to, I guess, put in a little bit of uncertainty where we can, because like, we want to be clear that like, we're obviously not professional scouts, and there's a lot of things where, you know, just based on, I think, the fact that there's probably just not enough voices in, you know, the public mm-hmm. side of scouting. So we can sometimes exist in a little bit of an echo chamber where we don't want to. And so we just want to, you know, put in as much uncertainty and say, you know, there are, you know, ways in which we can be wrong. And that's what we at least try to do, is say the ways in which that we're pretty sure that we can be wrong. And, you know, one of those things is sort of, you know, preseason, you know, looking at Rickea Jackson, it was that, I mean, this is just an easy example because I've already written about it since, but, you know, I think just in the blur, which we tried to make kind of clear that like, this is a player who can really easily prove us wrong just because, you know, it's just a certain skill set that's really hard to evaluate for us. And then thankfully they played Team USA, and I was like, all right, bet, that's good. I'll move her up 10 spots. Easy enough. Right. Yeah. I mean, like, same thing with Camila Cardoso. It was like, she looked a certain way coming off the bench where I was like, huh. Almost subconsciously, I think I was just comparing her to Leah Boston. I was like, huh, she looks kind of slow.
Yeah.
Well, she's not going to work like that. And I just sort of like wrote it off a little bit. And then like you see her against like Notre Dame with how fast their guards are. You see her against Alyssa Pealey. And look, Alyssa Pealey gave her the work. But like, come look, definitely. Alyssa Pealey gives everyone the work. Cardoso still had some good reps there. Look at that. And I'm like, oh, okay. This is a little different than I thought it was. I'm going to move her up a lot. And I think that's just a good thing, I think, about being a little transparent and at least sort of at least get an assessment of what we see and what we don't, and coming into that and looking for those kind of specific things so we can just really cover our bases, I guess.
Right. What a great segue for my next question is that based on draft board V1, who are the biggest risers and fallers so far this season?
So, I mean, the biggest risers and fallers, it's a little bit difficult for me to say, how much everyone is going to rise and fall just because the way that the ranking all comes together is basically me and Hunter and Lincoln do our best to sort of make rankings ourselves. And then we come together and we spend however much time we can.
So I'll just ask in your mind, right, from your perception,
yeah,
increased the most? They're the M. Adler draft stock. improved and who has kind of fallen off.
Yeah. So, I mean, the easiest ones are definitely Rakia Jackson, Camila Cardoso. Cardoso, I genuinely had her personally as a non-prospect entering the season. Thankfully, Lincoln and Hunter did not have her as low as I did. And so we put her on. I think I would be shocked if she wasn't top 10 for me personally by the time it's over. And I know that's like a cold take because most people easily have her there. But yeah, I mean, I've gotten to the point which is at least sort of like a really good spot for a prospect, which is like, okay, I know the big picture stuff. I need to see the little minutiae. And that's like, you know, the difference in like one or two spots, but also means like, all right, they're in that upper tier. Rakia Jackson, very similar spot for me as well. Other than that, I don't think anyone's really moved up hugely. You know, I think in my eyes, part of that is, again, you got that 3-year sample size. So you're sort of working against that. And really any movement I think people have are just sort of like shoring up some skills here and there. In terms of followers, I think it's a little unfortunate, you know, coming into the season, you always have like, oh, well, here are a bunch of interesting players. And if like maybe one or two of them hit on one or two skills that we're hoping for that we're a little unsure of, you know, that will really vault them up. And if you have that only happen like, you know, 1, 2, 3 times, that's still like 3 new really good prospects that you got. Unfortunately, I don't think that's really happened too much. You know, Maddie Shear is, we mostly go out on a limb with Maddie Shear, but she's at least like still quite good, but she hasn't expanded the on-ball usage. So I think the ceiling still worries us a bit. Papau's defense hasn't come along much, but I think, you know, she's playing for Dawn Staley. We think it probably will at some point. You know, Georgia Amor, the defense, because of the height, still is what it is. I could go down the list, but I think for most of the role players sort of in that like mid-range tier, that's sort of what we've seen there. I think as a result, sort of the next, maybe like the third quote unquote biggest riser is at least, you know, Jason Sheldon looks like she did junior year. We weren't really concerned about the injuries, but she still looks really good. And you know, just sort of by default, you have some players moving up for us.
Talk a little in the future about this freshman class.
we're already jumping ahead. So long, seniors.
Oh.
No, go ahead.
Just, you took my question, so I had to move further down my list.
Okay.
So if you could draft some freshmen now, if suddenly the rules changed, would any freshman be added to your board? One, and then two, if you had to draft some freshmen now, who would you draft if you wouldn't add anyone to your board?
So the easy answer is yes. Like, there would be a ton of freshmen added there. Part of that comes, you know, for the same reason we put international players on, you know, same young sort of age. We thank God for the internet. We are able to just select the games we want and say, you know, like let's say with Madison Booker of Texas is non-conference slate was for the most part, a complete joke. And so, you know, when they're playing Southwest directional Louisiana State, it's not so much that like we just like look at her stat line and completely write it off, but it's like, oh, that's interesting. The next time they play someone that like has a decent level of competition, like we're definitely going to pay attention. So come the UConn game, you see that and you're like, oh, okay, like this is legit. It was the same sort of thing with Mikayla Daniels, although they did open with Colorado, so that's a little bit of an exception. But you at least, sorry, not Mikayla Daniels, Mikayla Williams. Mikayla yeah. Daniels is a super, super senior at Arkansas. But yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of the same principle there with it's just there is that much room for improvement. And that's really the exciting part. So, I mean, to that end, like, absolutely. You know, I think we would add probably like at least half a dozen freshmen just like easily, and then a bunch of others if we could. You know, I mean, the immediately obvious names, Malaysia Fulwiley, Hannah Hidalgo, and Juju Watkins, I think are like the players that like are very obviously either going to be or at least have a really strong chance of being future like stars, if not superstars. And then, you know, obviously Mikayla Williams, Madison Booker, there are others who might not immediately come to mind. I'm really interested in the Aluchi Okinawa at Duke. Obviously Talia Scott hopefully makes a little bit of a jump with the 3-point shooting at Arkansas as your career goes on. You know, Zoe Brooks is really interesting at NC State. I could keep going down the list. But I mean, like for certain there are this freshman class, specifically at the top, insanely exciting.
Yeah, I'm so excited about them. And it's also like, I'm going to have to wait so many years for them to be in the WNBA because I just don't watch as much college. So I'm just waiting around for them to join.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's the thing for us is like, so we will eventually put out the article, but we're doing a podcast series over the summer about like, just looking at like the greatest sort of, or like most hyped prospects of all time and just sort of like through the current lens we have trying to, you know, reevaluate them and at least sort of filter that through then. And especially because that was just sort of a lead up to, hey, look at the prospects in the current senior class. But like part of the sort of residual effect of that with us is we come into the season and when we see, especially like Fulwiley and Watkins start play, we're like, oh, we know what happens when a freshman looks like this.
Yeah, Hidalgo's defense is...
Oh my God, it's amazing.
I'm blown away every time. Mm-hmm.
And that's actually one of the things that you asked before about like, you know, what do, you know, maybe some other public side people maybe underrate. I think one of the things that is probably the absolute hardest to, even with any level of confidence, evaluate, but also probably like... It, other than like baseline athleticism, probably the single most important thing to evaluate is processing speed. And yeah, I mean, Juju Watkins is absolutely unbelievable with it. Malaysia Fulwiley genuinely might be like one of the couple like quickest and most instinctive processors that I think I've ever seen. And I've watched way too much college ball for my own good.
Her bag is so slick. I love it. I hope that she maintains that same game going forward.
Mm-hmm. It's
beautiful. Go ahead, MJ.
Okay, so I'm a somewhat piggyback off Becky again, except not with a freshman. But have you seen Cody McMahon at OSU?
Oh my God.
Okay, so I'm not overreacting
yes.
by gushing. I'm not overreacting by gushing over her then.
Yeah, no, I was it's funny. Obviously her freshman season was like unbelievable. And like right towards the end, I think it was over like the last month or so, she started like taking a few threes per game, and it's like, oh, how about that? And if for some reason it felt like to start off the year, she kind of like forgot that she's like a human wrecking ball. And it was, I don't know if you, and again, this is like kind of like a just a random game on a day when there were like when there was a triple header on ESPN, but yeah. Penn State took Ohio State to overtime, and it took like after halftime of that game when Penn State was up 10. It looked like it was, something happened at halftime. It was the first time I've seen Cody McMahon like remember what she is after half, and she just took over. No, she's so much fun.
Mufasa came in a cloud. I was like, remember who you are. Anyone?
That sounds familiar, but
I said Mufasa.
Mufasa. Oh, Mufasa.
Remember.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, MJ can do the voice.
Remember, Simba.
All of the tournament will
don't
be
get
yours.
Me going. Please, right, I've been in character.
So let's talk a little bit about WNBA teams and the skills that they look for, the skills that work best from college players coming out of the level. But basically, let's do a little primer for it. Anybody who wants to look at kind of, you know, armchair scouting the game, we'll divvy this up. For guards, what would you recommend that they look at? What would you recommend that wings look at and bigs look at? And as by way of this, we'll talk a little bit about WNBA, what skills that teams seem to focus on for these three classifications of players. Like, what do you need to have for each subset?
Right, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing overall, and, you know, every team looks at things a little bit differently, and some teams look at things very differently than others. And the more you look at, you know, certain skill sets and certain archetypes, the more you sort of see how certain teams might differ on them in ways that are either interesting or make you want to pound your head into the wall.
Very true.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously across
cries the... in fever.
Hey, they're doing better now. I'll say that much.
Well, they will not. I don't think they're going to let this first round pick go in a couple of years. So
maybe Lynn Dunn can once again enjoy. She was on. I think it might have been The Athletic or it was our podcast. The next Locked On. She said after she got the first overall pick that would become Sue, she was getting like wined and dined by every team in the league, and the Liberty offered her literally three of their starters for that pick.
Wow.
So there is some universe in which some general manager is like, hey, do you want our entire roster?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when you're looking, obviously across the board, the first thing you're looking for is, you know, a baseline level of athleticism. You know, it's the league. You got to make it somehow like that. You just have to be able to hold up. Exactly what you're looking for varies a little by position. You know, the shiftier you are at guard and at wing, you know, the more that plays up the scoring. At big, the better you can move your hips, that is super important for paint defense and help defense, especially. You know, I think if we're trying to distill it down to just like, you know, a handful of things, when you start beyond athleticism, you know, for guards, it's obviously the shot. You need a shot that you can either project or can be confident about, you know, being able to hit when the closeouts get quicker and the defense is closing out to you, just the bodies get longer. There's a lot that goes into that. And I don't think anyone, even at like the NBA level, the professional scouting level, is particularly great at knowing exactly what makes a shot hit and what doesn't. You know, we know things that help, but you can see some wacky forms, but you know, that's part of it. The ability to attack closeouts just in general is one of the most important things. You know, how quickly can you take advantage of what is going on with your teammates when the defense has to account for other things? You know, can you react quickly enough in such a way and, you know, either get downhill or just move along the perimeter in such a way that it, you know, keeps the defense in rotation? It's those sorts of things like that, like the ability to, you know, just hit the next pass in general, that are these little things that you're not looking exactly at processing, but they effectively are. You know, how quickly can you react to maintain advantages that your teammates create? And then I think probably the last just umbrella thing for at least a guard is, you know, how well can you, I guess, for the one caveat I'll say, the WNBA does not care a lot. I don't want to say it doesn't care a lot, but doesn't care a lot compared to the men's side about guard defense. Whether that's a good or a bad thing, I think, is just a matter of personal opinion. And it's just how the game is. You know, we're set up differently. But I think guard defense is important, but, you know, at least in terms of offense, you know, that's going to dominate the conversations. So just generally advantage creation, having some way, shape or form, most teams are really going to care about, like, can you do something when the defense isn't already in rotation that at least forces some kind of advantage either for yourself or a teammate? You know, for forwards, for wings, it moves, you know, a little bit more towards the sort of away from offense only, and you have to, if you're considering more of a two-way player, it's how many positions can you guard? You know, if you can only guard one, you can only guard one, but the more you can, the better it fits in. And no, obviously there's things that go into that, but that's just sort of the overall thing here. How well are you able to make an impact offensively as someone who plays off of a lead guard, whether that is moving around the perimeter, whether that is being able to move really well in the interior to help set up your teammates, and mostly just how well can you play off of the ball and sort of scale into different roles. And then
yeah,
I think
portability, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, portability, exactly. And then your pure front court players, your bigs, this is where it almost gets into sort of it almost gets into a little bit of just sort of like magic, intangible sorts of things. You know, how well can you move your feet and your hips, but like not necessarily in a way that we have a really rubric for understanding? How well are you able to protect the rim beyond a certain baseline that I don't think anyone exactly has the same standard for? You know, are you able to finish? Well, that's good, but we can also teach you to finish if your defense is good enough that we don't need to care about that. It's all sort of relative. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, you will see teams with wildly different evaluations of different big of the same bigs, and why teams will draft for different archetypes is at that position, I think, more so than the rest.
Can you give us some examples of like bigs that you've seen drafted differently or considered differently by different teams, or what you think different teams have different archetypes for?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I think the most, I think the easiest examples, you know, some recent centers that have been drafted that weren't like obvious picks. So obviously Mike Thibault was, he had Shakira Austin at least second on his board, as he, you know, said later, and they were strongly considering just taking her at one if they didn't pull off the trade with Atlanta. They probably would have taken Ryan, but they might have taken Kira. And, you know, clearly whatever exactly the way is that he scouts and looks at things, like he was correct in that, like, she's no offense to Alyssa Smith, who is an excellent offensive player, but like Shakira Austin is like way on a new,
that might be transformational defensively
for absolutely sure. And like the offensive flashes, not even flashes, but like the offense she was playing with last year before the hip injury was unbelievable. But, you know, sort of setting that aside, like whatever he was looking at there, like he was absolutely right about. But like I'm very confident in saying the majority of the league did not really even like strongly consider the possibility of drafting Kira over Liss. And, you know, I really didn't either. Neither did Hunter. Lincoln, and again, we weren't a trio together at the time, but Lincoln loved Kira as a prospect. And that's the nice thing about getting different perspectives together, is someone can sort of correct us when we might be going a little bit too much in one direction and need to sort of see things from a different perspective. Another great example, Tier McCowan a few years earlier. There were not an insignificant number of teams that thought that she would genuinely never be able to get in the level of conditioning to be able to hold up for even like 6th, 7th woman minutes, that kind of role. And obviously she's able to at this point. And, you know, I can't necessarily speak to what the regime in Indiana at that point was thinking, but certainly, you know, Dallas and Indiana, when they drafted her, certainly had an idea of what that could look like. And, you know, I think, you know, she drafted 3rd overall, calling her the 3rd, maybe 4th best player in that, to come out of that draft is a pretty lukewarm take at this point, but there were a lot of teams who would not have taken her there.
Who do you think, so I have another question, a follow-up.
Go for it.
Who is, which teams do you think are the best drafters, scouters, ooh, from your perspective?
I think it varies a lot depending on what they are drafting for. And it's also a little bit tricky. Anytime I'm asked a question about these sorts of things, I mean, obviously what I've been doing this whole time, I'm trying to give myself, trying to hedge as much as possible. But I mean, I think,
don't worry, we'll edit all that out. Make you sound way, know, more confident.
We're gonna just grab the best sound bite and attribute it to you.
editing in it all comes out in the Washington Post. It's just the magical thing that makes everything better. Yeah, I mean, I think the sort of obvious ones are, you know, Dan Padover clearly knows what he's doing. For listeners who, you know, don't necessarily know the name, he's the current GM of Atlanta, former GM of Las Vegas. Yeah, again, right. clearly knows what he's doing with that. I think the regime in Minnesota has been able to keep up pretty well with the times. Obviously, you know, they've had some pretty prominent later round picks that have turned out to be a lot better than their draft slot lately. But I think just overall, they, not just on the results side, but even on the process side, like it's very clear it's very clear how they are, I think, ahead of the curve in that way. Obviously, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Mike Tebow. The funny thing is he has a reputation on, at least on the public side and even on the media side, for, you know, sometimes on draft day, just doing like something completely unexpected and something that, you know, we would have never even considered. And, you know, at least within Washington and within certain circles within the league, it's like, yeah, they kind of expect most of the things that sort of end up happening, or at least, you know, even if they're a little surprising, it's not nearly the same way that it is on the public side. And I think that just speaks to, you know, the level of gap between, you know, how well the good people at this are doing it and frankly, the rest of us, myself included.
I was about to say the perfect encapsulation of that was the this past draft, where it was like, Stephanie Soares? Yeah, really? Oh, traded to Dallas. Never mind. Makes sense now.
I am fortunate enough that we were doing a playback for that, so I have a recording saved of them drafting her. Us all going like, wait, why?
What?
And then hearing Dallas traded and laughing our heads off. I was laughing. I legitimately was laughing so hard that I did not have a break for when they announced that Lou was drafted number 5. And I just, I just got another boost.
Oh, okay. Goodness.
Okay. Can I ask a draft question?
Go for it.
Okay. If we can take away the obvious picks and maybe the popular ones too, which would be Caitlin and like Angel, Cameron Brink, you know, take those names away.
And well, I think you're asking the same thing that I was going to ask, is you're the GM of the Seattle Storm and those three are off the board. You're taking. Is that right? Is that where you're going?
I mean, not for the Storm, but just basically if the picks, or, you know, the top 5 per se that most of everybody's going to take, if they weren't available, who would be your top 5 for those team, or not even in team order, but just your top 5 outside of, I guess, let me pick the 5.
Caitlin, mm-hmm. do we even know who the number 4 pick is at this point? Do you have a solid answer to that question, Em?
I was about to say, I actually, a bit of a self plug here, coming into the draft Sunday morning, I put out an article that included, and to be honest, I do this on purpose. I buried about 5 paragraphs in actual intel on where things are at. It's pretty much, yeah. Caitlin, as far as I'm aware, pretty much the unanimous number 1, obviously.
I hope so.
It's possible, but I don't know off the top of my head any teams that wouldn't take Paige at number 2. Cameron, I don't think there's any universe in which Cameron Brink isn't also in that trio, in a tier of their own. That after that is where things start to get murky. I have not heard any names. I shouldn't say I haven't heard any names. I haven't, when I've asked questions, been directed in to names other than Aaliyah Edwards, Camilla Cardoso, and Rekia Jackson, as far as, you know, rounding out, you know, either someone's top tier or top, like, you know, 2 tier, or at least who's like in contention for that, or who could sort of rise to that level. You know, yeah. I am certain that there are going to be teams who have Aaliyah Edwards 7th, let's say. And right. While there are others that think I can say that there are certainly others who had a drop off after Edwards at 4, at least just right now. But I think at least a plurality of teams would have Edwards at 4. And then Cardoso and Rekia Jackson, I think, are pretty solidly the other options right there right now.
So do you want to amend your question, MJ, or is that that answer it?
Sort of, but I want the names.
So okay, taking out those top six, who would your next grouping be? You could just, you don't have to obviously list everybody, but who would be on that list, MJ or M?
I'll just first say that's tough because of what I meant, because of what I've mentioned before is like everyone who comes like right after those, I guess six are the players who I was like, and none of them are taking a step forward to differentiate themselves.
Right.
So no Layla, no Elizabeth Kitley, no. Because I mean, I kind of get where you're going, but I don't know. I started gushing as I was doing my research.
No, I want to be clear. I like them. I like a lot of players in this class. It's just that, like, saying trying to differentiate them between themselves is tricky in that sense. I'll set aside the internationals just because it's such a different question. Yeah. But I would say, again, in no particular order, those next five for me would probably include JC Sheldon, Tina Pow-Pow, Charlize Ledger-Walker, probably Georgia Amor and
you're going all point guards amazing. Now. This is great.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving. Yeah.
If we're staying on the college side, this right here is where it gets tough. Like honestly, I quite honestly could see myself within a couple months saying Alyssa Pelley there. I'm not there now. I just need to do more work on that. But like, as far as like right now, it could be Angel Reese if there's a little more of a jump shot there by the time we get there. Did I already say Maddie Shear?
You have not said Maddie Shear, but I know Maddie Shear.
Ran it out with her.
Oh, okay. Mentioned her earlier though.
Yeah. That is interesting. Maddie Shear is. I especially liked how you referenced a whole new category for her with the low usage wing.
Yeah, that's that is something that actually Hunter came up with before we like even worked together, just like the concept of like a utility wing. And like I can use terms that like from B-ball index to fit her into, but like that just makes my job easier, frankly. That's what I like about Hunter Lincoln sometimes. They just make all of our jobs easier.
There you go. All right. I think we both used up a lot of questions there. So go ahead, Becky.
I'm just throwing a completely selfish question for me.
There we go.
As a member of the Moro Boro, for Anissa Moro, where do you put her for next year as a prospect?
That is so tough. And like the reason it's so tough, first of all, is next year is kind of weird. Like I'll just say that off the top. First of all, obviously we don't know who's going to be coming back. You know, yeah. I should say most people, but like, There's an expectation that like Paige is pretty heavily in the coming back to school camp. That's more of a temperature check than like any real intel, but like, you know, that is where it is. There are a bunch of other players like top 10, 15, wouldn't be surprised if they came back at all. But like, you know, beyond let's say Paige, Janiyah Barker, Saniyah Rivers is like, I think a very obvious top tier. Like beyond that is a bunch of players who we like a lot that like we're just waiting to see like, is there a step forward in some direction? Anissa Morrow is very much like in that tier right there. But the reason for her, it's so much more complicated than like Layla Felia, Sonia Citron, Olivia Miles, is like she plays for a coach that like I think I'm very grateful that the public has finally sort of gotten to the spot in like the conversation about like women's basketball figures where we can say like, no, her coach is objectively terrible at like developing players. Mm. Just like that's how it's been for almost two decades at this point. And like, I don't know what to do with that. Like Anissa Morrow was making strides with a three-pointer at DePaul. There were defensive flashes there, like pretty, really interesting ones. And, you know, do I expect them to like materialize? No, I mean, in the same game where Angel Reese was benched at halftime, in that game, same game, Angel Reese actually, and this flew completely under the radar because of what happens at halftime. Angel Reese actually got benched literally 40 seconds in for taking a three-pointer. She takes a three-pointer. You can see because the camera zooms down on her. She misses it, and the ball changes possession. And they zoom in on Angel, and you can see her face. She's like, oh, shit. Anissa Morrow immediately goes to the scorer's table. To sub in for her, yeah, man. I don't know what to do with the development there. I have no idea. Anissa Morrow could be my number four. She could be my number nine. I don't know. She's so fun though. I think what we're really trying to say is
transfer.
You think
Anissa.
It translates to the WNBA though?
Yeah, I think
that's a concern. She's Well, I watched her at DePaul, so I'm like a season ticket holder at DePaul. So I
nice.
Watched her up close and personal, and she was more physical than most other people on the floor, and she like bullies other people in the paint, but she's only 6'1". And so my always concern was, you know, how does that game translate on the next level? Because she's no longer going to be able to bully people with her size. Or, I mean, she's still going to be a very athletic person, but she's not going to be big the way she is in college.
That's at least the nice thing about like playing UConn twice a year and playing Maddie Segrist, who, you know, Maddie Segrist, not a standout defender, but at least you're like, that's a WNBA body. I can see what happens here. And I mean, Samara just kind of moves through her. You're like, all right, that works. So you go against Aaliyah Edwards. You're like, okay, I see what's going on here. Especially if the 3-point shot comes along.
Oh, I hope so.
Boy, I do too.
So I guess piggybacking off of that, because I had my selfish question about the players that I love to watch play. Outside of, I'm sure you watch just a whole lot of games because you need a scout and do all that. What are the players or teams that you're just like, not for work, not for anything, that you're just like, if this game is on, I'm going to watch them because I just love to watch them play, even if they never go to the next level. It's not relevant for your job. Who are those teams or players?
I mean, the easy one right now is South Carolina, right? It's just literally everyone on that team is a name worth knowing just because they're fun in college at the very least. And they just play so well as a team. Utah is kind of the same principle. Indiana most of the time, I'd say as well, sort of jumps out at me in that kind of way. I'm trying to think. Last year was Zoo, even before the Pac-12 tournament, I think was a big one like that. UCLA, I think I'll admit, I was late to the hype train on UCLA this year, but like they are the real deal. And I think if I had to not list every team in the country who's good here, I'd say just round that out, Virginia Tech, Baylor, and Baylor and Florida State, I think for me are the other ones where like you can tell they're well coached because they all like play into the same system. It's really adaptive. They do super interesting and fun things, and it just never gets stale.
Yeah, that was the one live game that I was able to see was Stanford at Florida State, and I love the pro style offense.
I cannot believe you were at that game because again, I was able to watch that game afterwards, and that was generally one of the like craziest things I've seen, beyond the fact that the refs were calling the wrong line.
No, I remember that. I was reading your thing and I was like, hey, I noticed that and I'm like, I think I must be wrong because nobody's saying anything that they're not counting the 3-point line that I would recognize as threes. Wait, that was nuts. Yeah,
they
so
no, the
they called yes,
whole the whole tournament.
They only called the men's
four games.
Yeah, the whole tournament. There you go. Yeah, but I remember thinking that when I was watching it, I'm like, I must be mistaken. I guess I'm wrong. So nobody's saying a thing, and it was just like, and then
were
you
teams
have
adjusting
the article.
Or just didn't know.
No,
it
no,
must have been adjusting during the game.
I read about that a little bit, and that's the fact that like first of all, like most 3-pointers are taken deep enough that like it doesn't matter. But it's the ones where like you know you practice the number of steps that you have to cut to get there. Like there's one thing in the, I want to say like the mid second quarter, whatever. Taniya Latz, Florida State, they just bring the ball up and they basically have the four players at the ball. They're just in a box formation. And they swing the ball to the one wing. And on the other wing, they have their center at the elbow, screens for Taniya Latz, who's at the weak side block. She comes off the screen, takes a couple steps and fades off of it. And then effectively sort of steps back as she catches the ball into a catch and shoot, what should be a three right behind the line. So, you know, she's practiced the footwork so many times. She knows exactly, you know, which number foot to cut off of and how to balance her body weight and time things up. So like she's right behind the line for what they call a long two. Ridiculous.
That's wild. That's
yeah.
Wow.
I cannot believe that did not get corrected.
Yeah, we were able to do some capital J journalism and find out that the teams were aware at some point. We don't know if they were aware during the game. That's what I really wanted to know.
Well, if I spotted it, I can't believe like none of the coaches spotted it either.
They had to.
Yeah, they had to. So that's so bizarre. It's just the weird things that happen in college. By the way, Hannah Jump. What a perfect name for her, by the way.
My God.
Prettiest jumper I think I've ever seen. My God. It's so gorgeous.
If I had to rank, and again, from having watched way too much college women's basketball for my own good over a number of seasons, I would, in no particular order, like I think the three greatest shooters, and no offense to Taylor Robertson, like the three greatest shooters in women's college basketball history have to be Katie Benson, Maggie Lucas, and Hannah Jump. I mean, unbelievable shot.
So here's quite this segueing off of this, because we've kind of seen the way that Katie Benson, Taylor McCall, and some other players have the chances that they've gotten at the WNBA level. What does the WNBA have just against pure jump shooters? If you don't have like the floor game, it just seems like they're like that. Can't do it. Can't do anything with you. Can't put you out here. Or is it maybe they were just missing defense or whatever? But I would figure, as the game continues to evolve to more where the NBA game is, where it is really all about space and taking advantage of those, you know, the man advantages that you get as a result of that, that they would be more invested in pure shooters, and they don't seem to be.
Right. So this is actually a thing that didn't used to be a problem. When the roster cap was still, I think, 13, you would have at least a shooter or two per roster. Like, if the roster cap was 11, well, not 11, quote unquote 12 for the entirety of WNBA history, I would probably bet that Allie Quigley never plays in the W, or at least never gets to, you know, the role she did on the Sky. Like, you know, there's an, when Hunter and Lincoln eventually listen to this, they're going to make fun of me for this, but because we have an internal joke about how much I reference a player named Shauna Zolman. But Shauna Zolman was injuries marred her career, but she was probably still is like the most talented shooter in league history. And like, again, if the roster isn't there, then Dan Hughes never plays her, and she never scores what, like 20 points in like 14 minutes or something in a elimination game against Phoenix. You know, thinking about, again, another player marred by injuries, but like Maggie Lucas in Indiana was super fun for them in like the later years for Catch. And yeah, again, like that was the archetype that was basically like the first one cut when the roster was trimmed down. You know, what does it take? I honestly don't know. I think a lot of it is the fact that there's just a lot of coaches in the league who prefer players who can create less efficient mid-range shots than players who can't create but can hit a bunch of threes. No, I mean, I think the defense has to be there. I think that's the thing with me for Hannah Jump that was kind of the inflection point. She's grown a lot as an on-ball defender the past basically year and a half. Is that enough? I don't know. But it's at least enough for me to be a little more sure that if I were GM, it's, you know, sort of worth a shot. Mike Zell, I think, was more talented in terms of like the floater, but like the defense, I guess, is probably a little bit more important than a singular small aspect of offense. But you know, I think players, as more players are not necessarily filling the like shooter only archetype, but like lean more to 3-and-D than like mid-range creator and bad guard defender, I think teams are sort of having to contend with that more. And we're also getting, I think, more coaches who value that more.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
God willing.
Hopefully, like, you know, the Becky, well, she gets it's gotten a lot of attention, I think, probably more than is necessarily due at this point, especially given last year's team for the three-point barrage type of thing, which tailed off and nobody mentioned it. That's okay. Yeah, that hopefully that you know, people follow the winning formulas, and not just assume that the winning formula is drafting a bunch of number one picks in a row.
Well, I actually looked this up, and every single team that's gotten, I was double check this, every single team that's gotten two number one draft picks in a row has won the title the next few years.
There you go.
So the Seattle Storm got Lauren Jackson and Sue Bird back to back. Won a couple titles off of that, and then got Jewel Lloyd, Brianna Stewart back to back, won a few titles off of that, and then of course Kelsey, Asia, and Jackie coming along to the Aces.
It's not
their titles. And now we're gonna have Aaliyah and
Caitlin.
Hopefully. I don't.
Hey, she liked it on Twitter, the announcement that they won. Yeah. So there you go.
I can say probably on some level of background that it was expected, at least by a few teams, that if Indiana wins, she probably declares. If not, it's a toss-up.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah.
She wants Indiana?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because she wants to play with Aaliyah?
You know, I don't know if it's about situation. I don't know if it's about...
So she's looking forward to driving 7 hours back and forth, you know, working her home.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in the Midwest, that's just called a commute.
I shared a video on Twitter that I got from somebody. Like, I was just browsing around on Twitter, and I came across, actually, Aaliyah and Caitlin, like, talking about, you know, oh, we might play together, and you never know what might happen, and... Yeah, I mean,
tampering. That's tampering.
I mean, and somebody said, "Oh, the script was already written." I'm like, "This is a good movie. This is gonna be a good movie." And I don't know.
It's gonna be so much fun.
Yeah, but Caitlin's going to Indiana. It's a wrap. Don't.
Yep.
Take it. Take it. Snap. Just deal with it.
No, that's great. That's great. Rooting for it. Rooting for it.
The one thing I will say, Becky, there's another team that got back-to-back number one picks off the top of my head. Anyone?
Didn't Dallas? I figure that they would have at some point.
I'm pretty sure they didn't.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm looking at the list.
They didn't. They didn't use the second one.
I would think Dallas.
Oh, they
too.
Traded it.
Yep.
New York.
I see.
Yeah, New York turned it into
New York
Howard.
Yeah,
That one got thrown around quite a bit. That told me all I needed to know about the 2021 draft pick when it was traded for Katie Lou Samuelson, coming off 5 points per game.
Yeah, pretty much. I think the thing about the W is, like, if you get back-to-back number one picks, it pretty much guarantees, given the talent that comes out and how it's been spaced out historically.
Yeah, like every other year, you're probably going to get at least one transformation player.
Exactly. You're probably getting one, like, easy MVP player, and you're probably getting another one who is, like, at least a perennial all-star.
Yeah.
The Liberty
21.
the Liberty somehow got, like, the perennial, the sort of, like, at least a perennial all-star out of that, but not the other one. They just had to sign her in free agency.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, yeah.
They took somebody else's.
Right. It was like, thank you.
But yeah, it bodes well for the fever. It bodes well for the fever. I think, back to your point, I think the only way that, like, the Fever, you know, playoffs are hard to win. Small sample size. I think the only way the Fever don't at least come close to joining that list probably is just, like, the fact that the level of talent is getting raised so quickly that suddenly, you know, the difference in having multiple number one picks versus getting lucky with the draft when you're lessens a little. But yeah, they are so well suited.
Yeah. And I don't see any purpose of Caitlin Clark staying for another year. It just,
that's how I feel.
I don't, she's clearly better than everyone she's playing around, which at some point you kind of want to play better talent. And I also don't think,
I feel the same
I feel
thing
like
about
last
all the
year
three...
was her best chance to get a title, unfortunately, and like maybe do another run this year. But then after that, more people are graduating. It just, you know, she could transfer. She could go to LSU, and then they could like, you know.
Ooh, wee.
Kim Mulkey's not going to have her shoot threes. Don't shoot threes.
What if Caitlin Clark transfers to South Carolina?
Ooh.
Oh, my Lord.
Just form a super team.
We just doing it in every sport. It don't matter. We get into the college ranks now.
I like their guards too much. I don't want anybody to lose playing time.
Honestly, me too. Yeah. But yeah, I think, I think the only things for the most part, when you get to that level of, at least with Caitlin, it's, you know, are you getting paid so much by a local endorsement that, like, definitely won't pay you if you, like, even move across state lines? And also it's, are you trying to, like, leverage your situation as much as possible to go to, like, a specific situation? And it certainly seems like she doesn't have to do the latter.
Yep.
I mean, she's getting State Farm money. I think she's fine.
Nah, exactly. I want to know how much Hy-Vee is paying her so badly. Like, not even for journalistic reasons. I'm just curious. Yeah, it's got to be a lot.
I'm really curious about, like, the NI, especially the post WNBA. I'd love to get, like, at least some players coming out and saying, hey, look, I'm still getting sponsored. It's totally fine to come out. I don't know, you know, I don't know why they don't do that necessarily. Also, she's a Des Moines girl. If you were in Iowa, I'm sure you do just fine. You know, even even after she joins the WNBA, saying hey, because she's gonna be around,
sure,
at some point to film some commercials with you. So yeah, nobody's dropping her. That's super silly.
Yeah, I think the endorsements pretty much with NIL pretty much make a difference, not at the top tier and like not the bottom tier. It's like it's the tier where you're not doing endorsements, you know, not only with like not necessarily Gatorade, not Nike, but like also not like a big local brand that like might also want you afterwards. It's right. It's that tier where like you're getting NIL money through the school, but like you're not yet at the like high
and those
level
players are not that. nobody's like a guarantee for a spot at that level anyway, so
no,
yeah,
of course
stay for another year, sure. Mm-hmm. Why not? No, I totally understand that. It's the players, the big three that we've been talking about just seem that they are just they're playing on easy mode right now.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, Cameron Brink is a player I am just massively intrigued by. Tell me what you think her ceiling looks like for the WNBA.
So, I have a pretty, we have already actually fleshed this out. This comes back to MJ's comment before about the comps. When he is saying just entertain about the comps, what I was thinking was I pulled up my spreadsheet where I like keep the things we've worked on in there. What happens in the final board is we not only do the current comps, but it's also like, here's the floor, here's the ceiling in terms of comps. And yeah, we very much like, it's not that we go for the most entertaining ones. It's just like, what's the best way that we can figure out how to describe something without like getting into like weird spots of it. We have
that is cool that you include NBA comps in there as well for somebody who's more familiar with that game. I like that.
Yeah. Honestly, the start of that was like, first of all, the games are so different. Young players are like, you know, like a player who's modeling their game after like Steph Curry, like the only person you can comp them to in the W is like, you pretty much have like Becky and DT. And if it's not one of those two, then like, what are you going to do? Yeah. So pretty much I just wanted a bigger sample size. And then I realized sort of after a certain point, I mean, first of all, ball's ball, but also it just makes it more accessible. To that end, ask about Cameron Brink's ceiling. It's what we have down. We have skinny LJ and we have JJJ when he stops fouling.
Do you feel better about her offense or her defense at the WNBA level?
Yes.
Oh man, you get me so excited. I that was what really jumped out at me, is that she's just it's her defense is silly. In person, yeah, it's absolutely silly. It is. It's just every time anybody tried to test her, and it was like, pop, done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The ball is not in your hands anymore. That's
yeah. She's in a very unique place in terms of like where she started fouling and where she stopped, where like you can usually tell when someone has like foul problems, like Janiyah Barker has foul problems, but it's also like the question is, why do they have foul problems? Is it a lack of discipline, or it's just like they don't know what to swat at and what not to swat at? They just like don't know what they're looking at. And Cameron Brink was the latter, and then all of a sudden just like, you know, it improved little by little, and then this year she's like, nah, I got you. I love it so much.
I feel better like about her senior season, her block judgment, than say Asia in year two, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that's perfectly fair.
Do remember though, when you were doing those like daily college roundups and you would have a Cameron Brink foul tracker.
Oh, man.
She was just fouling so much. But certainly that's improved.
Yeah, I had the in terms of I had different ones there, which is, you know, what you do to keep yourself entertained when you're like up at like 2 a.m. every day doing that stuff. Which, look, was that because I took on an assignment? Not even took on. Was it because I created for myself an assignment that was like obviously a terrible idea? Was it just I needed to fill the void in my life? Who knows? But either way, what you do to entertain yourself at that hour of the day is you're like, man, Cameron Brink keeps fouling all the time. Wow, these numbers are crazy. And it was with her, Angel Reese, and at some point Emily Angsler, who I started doing like the foul tracker with. And thankfully I don't have to do any of that anymore. But thankfully I wouldn't have to do that for Brink.
Yeah. All right. Let's go final round. MJ, do you have anything?
No, I'm all out. I thought we were gonna dive into like picking, but
Well, it's been so nuanced so far.
Maybe it's too early. It's, you know what I mean?
Too early. Okay.
Yeah. Usually when I am answering questions like this, I just get nuanced just so that I can like have an out on it. But no, if you want like really dumb takes, like you can lead the horse to water.
All right. Okay. Let's do this. Give us your five draft hot takes right now. That you don't think other people share.
What are the hot takes I'm not going to get canceled for?
Please, we don't want canceled? You getting in trouble. We don't want you getting in trouble.
Canceled?
Amazon a few Twitter watch lists. So we have to
keep really.
I don't mean canceled in like the real way. I mean, I just mean canceled in terms of like that. Well, how do I keep my mentions the quietest?
I mean. Chaos.
who would be the most surprising? Let's start with this. I'll lead you in a little bit. Who would be the most surprising first round snub that you could see happening?
The surprising first round snub that I can actually see happening if they actually come out in the draft. I mean, to me personally, it would probably be like, let's say Tahina Paopao or like Sarah Andrews. I think on the public side, the most surprising one is like easily Angel Reese.
That's where I was going.
That's what I was going to bring her up.
I threw you a softball because I knew I think I knew what the answer was. So
can I piggyback off that though? Because I actually did want to ask that question. I forgot about it. Could you see Angel Reese not going to the W?
Based on of her own volition?
Yeah, like, because don't the NIL deals and everything stop, like, once they become pro?
No, we were just talking about that. They don't.
Well, that depends on who you're endorsed by, right? So LSU, it has, like, if we're tearing off, and I'm definitely going to write about this at some point just for fun, but, like, if you're tearing off, like, NIL situations, LSU is tier one, and they might be their own, like, tier 1A. There is absolutely no doubt that, like, the entire starting lineup is over the course of their, like, time at LSU, not having to go to class because screw that, you're not here to play class, and also they are going to walk away from LSU. Like if they are coming in, if LSU is recruiting them to be starters, they are going to walk away with like seven figures, no doubt.
Yeah,
there you go.
Like multiple.
And I mean, if they're getting that kind of money up front, and you go to the W, and you're just gonna get like, what would a number 1, 2, 3 pick? What's their salaries? Like probably 100K, I want to say.
This year it's probably the high eights.
Okay. And that's
endorsements.
The college endorsements I don't think go anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You see the WNBA players in the commercials. They're out here.
I don't know. I'm just thinking that Angel won't. I don't know. I think if she doesn't,
I'm going to get canceled for you, Em. I think if she doesn't, it's just going to be to save face because I see her as a quick cut if it happens.
Yeah, there you go. Like she definitely like wants to. She definitely wants to go in the W and get drafted and play there. She also definitely wants to like, you know, just keep playing and getting paid to do so. I don't blame her either way for that, honestly. But like, I would not be shocked at all if she gets drafted. If like, you know, season ends today, would not get shocked at all if she was drafted like, let's say seventh. I'd be floored if it was top five, but like would not be shocked at all if it was like 7 or 8. Although man, that green room could get real uncomfortable. Real uncomfortable. That camera, those questions from Holly.
Man.
Yeah, Holly will say something.
Yeah, for real.
Oh no, no. I'm saying those cameras could be on her waiting around there for too long, for a lot longer than you'd want.
Yep. There you go. That would have been a great question to pick the have a poll for the last player left in the green room.
That's kind of bold.
It's mean.
It also sucks because in the WNBA, unlike like the NBA, if you're drafting the first round, you're like making a team or you're making you at least go into the G League. The WNBA, you're not drafting the first round. There's a big likelihood you're not on a team at all. It's
yeah.
And you have to go to Europe.
I think I think part of that is like the depth of the current classes kind of skews the conversation a little bit. Like we've had a bunch of classes in a row where the depth just like hasn't been to the level it was. And I think part of that is the fact that like we expected, you know, the hype around the conversations around like the 2020 draft, you know, the Sab Satu draft, like were about, man, like even if you don't have a topic, like there's a lot of good depth here. Those were not exactly correct takes. And I think that kind of colors, especially the fact that we knew the couple ones coming after it would not have much depth, but now we're hitting this year, not so 24, not 25, but 26, all going to have a certain level of depth that I think is going to make it a little bit different for second round picks.
So something that kind of irritates me a little bit it seems like the unwillingness of a team to, when there's a cut, to maybe pick up an earlier drafted player. It seems like they don't do that a lot, and maybe it just has to do with training camp and getting people ready, and you don't want to suddenly bring in another name. But it also makes it seem like if you didn't wind up in the right situation with a team that actually needs you, no matter where you're drafted, it's like an uphill climb to get another chance for another team to take a chance on you.
Yeah, right. And like, I don't get that. It's like the teams know coming into the camp, sort of like, obviously they know who's going to be on the roster. They know who is almost certainly not going to be on the roster. And they also know, you know, the little group in between that it's like, oh, hey, we'll see what they do in camp. Like, I don't understand the fact that if you have a good grade on someone who gets cut in camp a little bit early for a team that, you know, clearly had a tougher spot to make in their roster, why don't give them a shot? Like, there's a lot of teams who desperately need like young control players, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Is it just the quick turnaround? I mean, camp is 2 weeks, right? Like,
yeah, like for sure.
Very quickly.
But like, for sure. But like, man, what else are you doing with like the 10 and 11 spots? Like, are you paying the minimum to like a 34-year-old who you don't want playing? I don't really get it.
Yeah, that's another thing that bugs me too. Sweet spots. They gotta make a little more room. Make some more room for the youngsters. Those 5 minute a game, 7 minute
a
game.
Oh wow. Spots. Got Alexis Morris over here.
That's it.
The one thing I will say, it's probably bad for your career prospects if after getting cut, you then go online.
No, that's that was probably advised against that one. Oh, Alexis, sorry, so sorry. God, that was funny. And of all the players to target, to target like an all-star caliber player, why are you still around?
It's the weirdest thing.
Bad career advice. Okay. Do we have any final questions? Becky, MJ, anybody?
Nope.
All right. Once again, we stretch out the pod to a very comfortable, you know, maybe it's a two-parter for you, but this was great.
Did you warn M that we never stay
yeah, we
within
never.
An hour?
M did not ask. M did not at any point say like, "Hey, I can only stay for an hour. Otherwise, I would have tried to move things along." It's just this is how we catch up. You're spending your evening with us. And that's just the way
yes.
it is. I'm sorry.
in the evening with the six pod.
In the evening yes, yes. with the six pod. That's it. That's it. This is it. We sit around. We chat hoops with all of our best people. So yes, this was another snap bucket list podcast bucket list acquisition. M, thank you so much for showing up. This was awesome. I loved how detailed and nuanced your answers were. It was a lot of fun.
Yes, plug the next hoops.
Everything that you next got hoops, going on. Yeah, over. they got podcasts, and they have articles, and yes. They're run by Howard Megdal, who is fantastic.
Check out M's draft 1.0 because it's
draft 4.0. Oh yeah, is there an ETA on 2.0? Do we have any idea when that might be coming out?
Yes, yeah, so we're definitely going to do a midseason update. I am going to promise that it is not going to be anything near the length. It's probably just going to be like, here are some risers, here are some fallers.
That's
man. No, 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 no.
Reread 1.0 again for everybody.
I was about to say. I understand the boo. I would boo me too, but you do not know how much time went.
No, I
man. Oh my god, it is a nightmare. It is a nightmare.
It is.
I've been staring at the draft list of like the players that we like enough to like put on the final board. And yeah. It's just like, man, it's like 500 words you end up doing like per player. And it's just,
yeah.
I need half of you to just say you're going back to school, please. actually not half. I need a third of you to go back to school. So we really evenly split you over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Good Lord, man. Like you don't want to know how long it took me to do the board, like the 1 year where I was doing it alone. Horrible idea. Don't know why I did that. Why do I do this to myself?
You probably got overwhelmed, honestly.
That draft, I only put on like 20 players, and like the last like five, I just like did like three sentences on. Even that, I turned in a couple midterms.
What you have to do is sneak in like a nonsense sentence just somewhere deep in the like in the 20s or so, and just see if anybody notices it.
No, here's the thing: it's so many words. And it's me, and especially with that one, it was like writing it so much and like the hours I was writing it at, like, no, I'm certain there are multiple nonsense words in there on accident that like the editors weren't that into, because that's a 50-minute read even without editing it.
Oh, I've probably done it twice. Love those things. That's what I like. I like the novel I can just dig into and read so much detail about everybody. It's great. So anyway, yes, this was again another somebody I really, really wanted to have on. So thank you, Em. This is terrific. We may ask to have you back at some point, maybe around draft time. How about that?
Of course. Always happy to talk hoops. And also everything else that came up.
Yeah, right. That's
never. You don't get out of basketball. Being a guest on this podcast without talking to nonsense.
That's the fun part. Every week on Saturday, and this is half a plug, it wasn't supposed to be, but every week on Saturday, I have to do a pod that has to be, now for like monetizing and advertising reasons, has to be between 27 and 33 minutes. We have to hit specific ad breaks, and we very much don't have enough time or advertiser interest to get too much into the nonsense. So it's fun to forget the amount of time that's on the clock and just to
I guess we could never be a Next Hoops podcast. Oh well. It's 33 minutes. What? That's just the introduction. Stop. You just stop right there. all right. Very cool. Well, before this goes to an hour and 33 minutes, I want to thank you again, Em. This was tremendous. Love to have you back. I especially love this. I love your answers. I loved how nuanced they were. And you're a lot of fun. We like to have fun.
Indeed.
So thank you so much. On behalf of myself, Snap Wilson, Becky Robococo, MJ Tolliver, and our guest M Adler, y'all have a great rest of the NCAA season. We will be back at some point when we have something to come back with. We will see y'all later. So be good to each other. Don't be, you know, an idiot online, please. Just, you know, yeah, be positive, right? Just be positive out there. It's too much negativity in the world. It's already kind of a crappy place to live right now. So why don't you just introduce a little positivity into the environment? And that's it. We'll see y'all later. Peace out.
Peace out.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Well, it was nice. We got you in there at the end.